Welcome to the Love Your Story podcast. I'm your host, Lori Lee. John Ply, our guest today, is a successful businessman who started his own company twice and made millions. His father, Ziggy, was a Polish immigrant who was captured by the Germans in World War II and survived the horrors of a POW camp and then moved to America with nothing but the clothes on his back. Both men personify different types of success. And on today's show, John Ply joins me to share stories and lessons learned from both lives. Stay tuned as we talk about stories of his father turning in a lost $20 bill when it would have paid his mortgage for the month, or when he refused to shoot a woman that the Germans in the POW camp demanded that he kill or be killed. We've got lots of good stories, so stay with us. Stories are our lives in language. Welcome to the Love Your Story podcast. I'm Lori Lee, and I'm excited for our future together of telling stories, evaluating our own stories, and lifting ourselves and others to greater places because of our control over our stories. This podcast is about empowerment and giving you, the listener, ideas to work with in making your stories work for you. Story power serves you best when you know how to use it. John Ply has taken the stories of his father and the things he learned from him and written a book about both of their lives. The book is called You Can Be the Best. Today, John is here with me and we are going to share stories and some beautiful ideas for successful living. John, welcome to the Love Your Story podcast.
Thank you, Lori. It's really nice to be on your show. I'm kind of a rookie at these things, but every time I do one, I hope I get a little better. And I'm looking forward to being part of your group of storytellers.
Absolutely. You'll be great. No worries at all. Tell us all about you, your story. And let me give you a jumping off point. In one of the first chapters of the book, you have this section that's entitled, You Never Know Where Becoming the Best is Going to Take You. And I love this idea of doing the best that you can do at anything that you try, and stirring that with the magic of the unknown, you know, like how that's going to translate into opportunity. That's a thrilling idea. So let's start in the summer after eighth grade.
Well, that's a great place to start, because having grown up in a relatively poor family, that became a real turning point for my life, because that's when I kind of got a better idea of just how poor my family was. Because after graduating eighth grade, all my friends were going to a private Catholic high school. Mm. And I wanted to go there also and play basketball, because these are all my basketball buddies. And my parents couldn't afford it. They could not afford to send me to high school. So you think about people who can't afford to go to college. Mm. How about not being able to afford to go to high school? And so one of my good friends, my best friend, in fact, Jack Gleason, who actually wrote the foreword to my book, he suggested I come and caddy at a golf club. He said, you can make good money. I'm like, okay. So I started caddying after eighth grade, which allowed me, my parents paid my first semester, and I paid the rest of my high school education through caddying.
You know what I love so much about that is that you were determined enough and you wanted that badly enough to make it happen. I feel like any more than... I don't mean to be a downer on the kids today. I'm sure there are still ones that would, but anymore, it feels like with their sense of entitlement, if it doesn't just come easy to them, that it's like, oh, that's not supposed to happen. I love the stories where people just decided they wanted something and you were so young to say, I'm just going to find a way to make this happen and make it happen.
Yeah. And then unbeknownst to me, you talk about you don't know where things are going to go in your future. After my junior year in that summer, my caddy master at the club said to me, are you going to apply for the Chick Evans scholarship? And I said, well, what is it? He says, it's a college scholarship given just to caddies. And I'm like, well, sure, I'll apply for that. And lo and behold, I received a Chick Evans scholarship, which paid for 4 years of education at Indiana University.
See, who knew? Who knew that just your initiative to say, I want to make sure I go to high school was going to set off these dominoes that took you all the way through a college education, which, you know, your parents wouldn't have been able to give you, but your initiative just opened up these doors.
Lori, my parents cried.
Oh,
I got that. You can't even imagine the joy
and relief that you could have these.
And also their level of pride that here's their son getting to college and they couldn't have sent him. And so continuing on your thought about where you don't know where the future goes, I decided to study finance and become a banker because my best friend Jack's father was a very successful banker. He belonged to two country clubs. He had a beautiful big house. And I'm like, I want that light. Remember, the subtitle to the book is Life Lessons from the Butcher and the Businessman. Mm-hmm. My father was the butcher. And I actually did a little bit of that work when I was in college, when I came home for Christmas break. And I'm telling you, after spending 2 weeks in a meatpacking facility, trust me, I didn't want to do that for a living.
That was hard work.
That was hard work. And so I wanted to be a banker. So I studied finance and I met my wife of the time in college. At the time, it was like, come out of college, you're going to get married. That was like what we did back then. And I needed a job. And the banks that I were interviewing, I kept not being offered a position. And I didn't know why. Well, it turns out banks were not hiring undergrads that particular year. Every other year, they would go from hiring an undergrad. The next year, they wanted MBA students. I came out on the odd year, so I couldn't find a job. And I needed to find one because we were getting married. And another mentor friend of mine, John O'Neill Sr., said to me, John, here's an idea. I want you to write handwritten letters with a resume to all the country club members you used to caddy for. Because they're all different types of successful people. Well, that exercise, believe it or not, got my wife a job. And then a week later, I found my job.
Like, that's no small thing. You probably knew 100 people from the club and 100 handwritten letters. And like your initiative and your follow through, it's just something I think we need to bear witness to in the world, that those are the things that bring success. Those are the things that open doors when you put in the effort for the things you want. And I love the intentionality of how you're building your life on purpose.
And John O'Neill insisted handwritten. Well, let me tell you, to write 50 plus handwritten letters without a scratch out or a misspelling, I can't tell you how many letters I began and threw in the garbage because I made a mistake.
How's your handwriting, John?
It's actually quite good. Well, you should see it in my book. That's good old Catholic grade school upbringing with that curse of handwriting, you know, in my book. but yeah, I mean, what a creative idea. And I did that job and sure enough, found jobs. Now, my job that I took at that time was in an industry I knew nothing about. The pay was so low. As a typical college kid, you know, you're comparing with your buddies. What are you starting at? I didn't tell anyone because mine was about half what everyone else was getting. But my boss at this company said to me, you want to work here because you're going to learn everything there is to know about running a company. And we don't give raises on how long you're here, but on performance. Well, I had been a high achiever throughout my life, especially in my sports career, in all athletics, caddying, I achieved. So I thought, okay, I'm taking this job. I need a job. And I took an inventory control position and I didn't even know what that was, but I quickly learned.
Absolutely. You do, huh? Jump in and see where you can build from there.
Yep. And this was an industry. This company was providing a blending and packaging service to the food industry.
Well, let's talk about this because you say being the best you, like that this was a thing that you brought up in your book over and over, And I loved how you said, be the best you and everything else takes care of itself. I think we saw that when you're talking about caddying. You really put in a lot of effort to be the best caddy you could. You didn't know what you were doing going in, but you really paid attention to making that happen for you. And that opened doors to scholarships, letters of recommendation, the job that you got later down the line. And now you're taking a job where, again, you're not sure what you're doing, but you try to be the best you in doing it, and everything else takes care of itself. So yeah, continue with the story. How does everything else take care of itself?
Here's what happened. My father, the first lesson from the butcher was, Johnny, no matter what job you do it to the best of your ability so no one can say you didn't earn your paycheck. Guess what? I used that attitude at this company called Lauritsen & Company. I went from inventory control to production control to assistant VP to vice president to president of this company. And I was just over 24 years old at the time.
Wow. Wow.
Yes. Crazy, right?
That out. Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
Now, there were circumstances that helped that occur, including 1 year after I started, the Pillsbury Company was 95% of this company's business, and there was a big disagreement between our companies. And let's just say we won the battle but lost the war. Mm. Pillsbury dumped us as a supplier, which opened the door for me. My boss said, I thought I was going to lose my job along with everyone else. And he just said, John, I'm going to teach you how to sell, and we're going to save this company. So basically, over those first three years, I learned everything about blending and packaging powdered food products. And I did help save that company. That's why I got all those promotions. Unfortunately, you know, there's other lessons in that book, like being honest and being kind, things like that. Well, my boss was a hard-nosed entrepreneur who made me promises that he eventually didn't keep, okay? And it got so bad one time that I finally got up and left, and I didn't know what else to do. All I know is blending and packaging. So I started, one of our clients who left, he said, John, if you would open up a little blending company, I would go in with you and you can blend my product. And I said, well, okay. The problem I had was one of the things I learned working at this other company was titles don't mean anything. It's who owns the company, who has the clout. So even as president, I was being undermined by my boss. And so when this opportunity to start this next company, I had to come up with, you know, half the money. I didn't really have any money. And I went looking for loans. And I got thrown out. Almost every bank I went to, I got thrown out. Lori, the prime rate was 21% when I decided to start a company. So the banks couldn't loan me money, right?
It was brave of you, very courageous to push ahead.
I didn't know what it was. So finally, I was running out of time. My client who had lots of money, I needed to, if I was going to do this, I had to get 51% of the stock. The idea was it was going to be my company. Finally, I was desperate. I went to my parents. Their whole life, you know how much they had? They had $15,000 in savings. They loaned it all to me, Laurie. They loaned it all to their son.
Isn't that amazing? Right? I mean, it really is when that's all they have and they're older and that's what they've saved for their lives. And man, the trust they had in you.
And I had one more bank. I said, you know what? I'm going to the one bank that knows me, and that was the company that I worked at, their bank. And I went there and I told them what I was doing. I told them how much I needed, another $15,000. And they asked me about my collateral, and they laughed at me. They said, John, your collateral won't cover our legal fees, but we're going to give you the loan because we like you and we think you're going to do what you say.
Look at all the people that had faith in you.
Yes. And I had my share to get 51%. Here I am going into a business. I know nothing really about, you know, I'm 25 years old at the time. So, you know, you talked about be the best. All right. And that's obviously how this book came about. When I started that little company, and I'm talking about one blender, one forklift, one sifting machine and sewing machine, and one Hispanic helper with me. That's how I started it. And when I set the goal for my first little company, I said, you know what? We'll never be the biggest, but we can be the best. That was the goal.
Sticking with your motto, be the best you.
Yes, be the best. Be the best you. Always do your best. Strive to be the best, and good things happen. Well, over the next 13 years, Lori, I built that little tiny company into a fairly significant business. In fact, it became four times larger than the one I had left. However, with all that success, I ran into another roadblock. I just built this beautiful new facility. 2 years into it, I thought all our problems were going to be solved. And guess what? I had too many clients. I had too many customers. We were so good at what we did, we couldn't take care of the clients. And when I went to ask them for an increase in price, they would threaten, oh, no, we'll have to go somewhere else, you know, that kind of thing. And so I was faced with another problem. What am I going to do? I have this good company, but we were losing our efficiencies. And that was a low margin business, by the way. So I finally came up with this idea. I said, you know what? I'm going to hire a product developer. We're going to start developing products just like my clients. And I'm going to hire my company to blend and pack them. So I started a second company to be a customer of the first.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Right? It's all covered in my book, You Can Be the Best, as you know. And oh my gosh, people thought I was crazy. And I went out, went to my bank, because I was a fairly good client at this point. I'd grown nicely. I said to my bank president, Fred Alford, I said, Fred, I need another loan, $250,000 just to me personally, because I'm starting a second company. I said, if I pull this off, you'll have two good customers instead of one. He loaned me the money. I went out and hired the product developer. And this is the part of the story that really should tell your listeners to never give up, because I paid this guy $75,000 just in salary to help me help us develop products. Well, that first full year in business, I sold zero. Nothing. And people were coming up to me, my VP of ops, my accountant, everyone saying, John, we got to figure something out. This isn't going to work. And I said, no, this is our future. So Lori, the next year, didn't sell a lot, not enough to even eliminate. I had 120 clients, by the way, in my service business, 120 different companies. Next year, we sold 220,000 in sales. Not much, but something, right?
That's awesome.
Something. Well, I'll give you some growth rates. Next year, 1.8 million. The next year, 4 million. Next year, $15 million in sales. The next year, $33 million in sales.
What was the factor for having that increase so much?
I ended up in the right place. And again, because I had all these clients, so when I started my product company, the one category they were not in was hot chocolate. Mm-hmm. So I started developing gourmet hot chocolate, and then the world of cappuccino hit. And I was in the right place at the right time. So if you go into any 7-Eleven in North America, any Casey's, Wawa, Sheetz, Quick Trip, and you push the button on the machine for French vanilla cappuccino or hot chocolate, those are all my powders inside there.
I don't want you to tell the whole story because we got to leave stuff for the book. People need the book. But let's talk about this idea of, well, there are so many culturally dictated ideas of success. And we talked in the book, you talked about a couple different things as we look at what success is. So number one is, what is your own individual definition of success? Because success doesn't necessarily be, and as we get to talk about Ziggy, you'll see this, we're looking at success on different levels. So it doesn't have to be money. It doesn't have to be accomplishment. Maybe it's peace. Maybe it's, you know, a good, strong, ethical, moral life. What, you know, let's talk about that.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought that up, because truthfully, that's a huge piece of this book and why I wrote it, because I think the definition of success has been distorted these days. It's always about, you know, money and how much money it is, whether it's a contract for a sports person, these crazy numbers they're getting, and a movie star or whatever. People think of them as success. Well, I dove into the real definition of success, which I believe I've nailed. It's a combination of this. Where did you begin? And what, and where did you end up? Because everyone's beginning is different. Okay. And it's a great lead into my father, who I still to this day define him as the most successful person I've ever met.
Tell us some stories about Ziggy. What's your favorite story about him and what he taught you?
Gosh, there's so much, but just I'll give a Cliff Notes version. But he went in the Polish army when he was 18. At age 19, he was captured by the Germans and spent the next 5.5 years as a prisoner of war.
That's the kind of thing, unless you've been there, there's no way to comprehend the trauma.
No, you can't. And you know, there's a chapter in my book called Never Give Up No Matter What. Well, if my dad had given up for just one moment, I wouldn't be alive. He would have been killed like most of the prisoners were. He made it through, and then he continued to work for the U.S. Army and eventually immigrated to this country. And, you know, his name was Zygmunt Plibachevsky. My name is shortened from Plibachevsky. So you can imagine what he faced when he came into America with barely a high school education and that name, and didn't speak much English. So here he had to kind of, you mentioned the $20 that he got doing a crappy job, he found it, and he couldn't keep it. His goodness would not allow him to keep that $20. He turned it to his boss. He said, hey, this is not mine. Someone lost it. And it would have made a huge difference in his life at that moment. And his boss said, as you know, if no one claims it, it'll be yours, Ziggy. And no one did. And he got that $20. But that's just the start of his, what I call his goodness, his honesty, and all those kinds of qualities that will eventually lead to ultimate success. This man then finally, he got a job as a meat cutter butcher. Not a glamorous job, but Lord, he worked two jobs to raise five children. We'd see him barely, you know, we never saw him in the morning. He was long gone. After his second job, he got home around 7, 7:30. And that's when we ate, when he got home. And the poor guy oftentimes walked through the door and he'd say, how are the kids, honey? Well, Johnny was bad or Richie was bad. And off came the belt, right? We got spanked. And after working 13, 14 hours, that was his, you know, welcome home day. But eventually he did that for 35 years and he retired. He spent the next almost 30 years of his life continuing to just do good for other people. As life went on for him, he kept saying to me how blessed he was, how happy he was, and how content he was. He'd always say, there's nothing. I am so lucky. I'm so blessed. There's nothing else I want in life, right? He's just couldn't be happier. And I realized he achieved a level that is the ultimate level of success, because money doesn't buy success. Money buys comfort. You know, money buys comfort, security, whatever. But true success, when you look where he started and where he ended up with complete, he was grateful. That was the other thing. Grateful, happy, content, and blessed. John Clyde definition of success. And I learned that from seeing my father. And he could have been angry. He could have been ungrateful. He could have been all the opposite things because of what he went through.
Yep, he could have been bitter and he could have been a very mean man from all the things that had happened to him. And in your book, you know, spoiler alert here, but you know, he ends up in the end of his life spending a lot of time and money, and you help him with this, but sending stuff back to his Polish ancestors, helping them, and it sounded like a lot of them, like 50, 60, like all the kids and all the grandkids and everybody, to have food and socks and think, you know, things that they didn't have there. Tell us just a little about that.
It's a great, I'm glad you brought that up too, because again, the guy didn't have any money, right? He would send packages. I'm talking hundreds of packages. And through the course of a year, it would probably be several hundred packages filled with things we take for granted, you know, underwear, socks, shoes, toilet paper, whatever, staple foods like macaroni and cheese. Of course, for me, hot chocolate and things like that was sent to Poland. And he would insert $20, right? Maybe $10, $20, $50, whatever.
Well, but for them, that was huge.
Especially in Poland, it went a long way, okay? So remember I said they loaned me all they had to help me become, you know, my own business and successful?
Yep.
I did something for my father, which changed the lives of his family. Over a 10-year period, I gave him $1 million to send to Poland. And he divvied it up between all these people. They didn't know what the heck was going on. And I wanted him to get all the accolades. And he would just say, well, my son is helping make this happen. And I'll never forget, when he went there after this had been going on for a while, he didn't get there very much as he was older, but he would show up at the airport. All 67 people would be at the airport with flowers for him. Oh. It's just the most, right? It brings tears to your eyes. It's like, as I say it, I want to cry. Giving back. It's a big piece in this book of true success.
Yeah. And even when you don't have anything, that's, you know, that's it. Obviously you contributed a great deal to make that possible, but he was doing it even when he didn't have anything. I think so often we think, oh, when I make that much money, or when I hit it big, or then I'll have more to give. But that natural space of giving, that success of making the world better, we can do that at any point.
Lori, when we were little, we'd go to church every Sunday, and my dad didn't have anything, but he always had an envelope for church, but he also had little envelopes for us. So he was teaching us when we were kids to be generous, give back, even when you don't have much. So my envelope might have had a nickel. My oldest brother had a quarter. My middle sister had a dime, right? It's giving back is also part of being success. If you become this, again, I hate the idea of giving back money. There's so many other things you can do to give back. Your time, for example.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
You know, there's a story in that book of my friend teaching advanced algebra for 21 years for free.
There's so much we can give, and we all have different gifts and talents and things at our disposal. So when everybody gives a little of what they have, it rounds out the picture. So, you know, that's another place where I think comparison need not be a thing. Give what you have. Give what, you know, give that talent, give that ability, share what you've got. And that's enough.
And you know what, the old saying, it comes back tenfold. Well, I got news for you. It comes back way more than tenfold. I mentioned in the book, it comes back 100-fold. I mean, I can't even tell you how many wonderful things come back to you when you are generous, but more importantly, when you are kind. Mm-hmm. When you are kind to other people. In fact, in my book, you know, you have the final manuscript. There's a lesson in there. I don't know if you were going to talk about it today or not, but it wasn't in the original manuscript about it's only a small world for good people. Did you catch that one?
But it's a big world.
But it's only a small world for good people. Okay? Because when you're good and you're kind, guess what happens? You may meet so many more people like that. And then you start meeting their friends. And from their friends, you meet more friends. And that's where the world is small. But if you're not a good person, you're a criminal or whatever, It's a big world.
Yeah, you miss the connections.
You miss the connections. You miss all those new friendships. Yeah.
So John Plye's book, You Can Be the Best, Life Lessons from the Butcher and the Businessman, goes into a lot more detail about both of these men's lives, which you're going to want to read the stories because they're great. But maybe let's visit this concept of the clubs of success. So you end up further down in your life actually being a coach for...
Mentor. Yeah,
a mentor. Okay, a mentor for golfers. Right?
Not for golfers per se, but my mentorship with one female golfer, her name is Lilia Vu. My success with mentoring her led me, it was the final push to write this book. Lilia, I met just by happenstance. We didn't know each other. We're hitting balls one day. And together, and we're only two on the driving range, and you know, I couldn't believe how good she was, how beautiful she struck the ball, and but I sensed a little sadness about her, so I engaged with her, and I even talk about this in the book about being willing to engage with strangers. A lot of people don't want to, but they're missing out on life if they're not willing to. So Lily didn't know me, I didn't know her. She told me her story. Lily had graduated from UCLA. As the number one female amateur in the world. She went the next year out on tour. She played like 8 or 9 tournaments. She missed the cut in all but one. She lost her playing privileges. So she lost her card. The next year was the COVID year. You have to go through something called the Symetra Tour, and the top 10 ladies in that tour get their card for the LPGA. And we met at the end of that year. And she was not getting her card. And I just said out of the clear blue after she told me her story, I said, Lilia, I don't know if you'd be willing to work with me, but I believe I can help you achieve your golf dreams and more. And Lori, she said, yes. I didn't know at the time, I've learned it subsequently in her interviews, she was thinking about quitting golf. And this was her passion. And she was, at one point, the best female amateur in the world. We'll make a long story short. Lilia got all the lessons in this book before there was a book. She learned about Ziggy Plye and what he went through. So she got the lesson, never give up no matter what. Be honest, be grateful, and on those chapters, as you know, all those chapters. And Lilia went out on the Symetra Tour after 6 months of my mentorship. She won 3 times. She graduated number one and she got her LPGA card. The next year she got her card. She went out. She didn't win. She was very disappointed. She didn't win, but she won $919,000 and her world ranking was number 41. Last year, Lori, she went out. She won 4 times, 2 majors. If you go look it up right now, Lilia Vu is the best player in the world.
Good for her. And through this process, you came up with something that's called the Clubs of Success.
Yes, yes. Basically, that means, you know, in golf, if you want to have success in golf, you have to choose the right club. And in life, I compare it. See, the beautiful thing in this book, you don't have to be a golfer to understand these comparisons that we make between golf and life. For example, one day, one of my lessons to Lilia, I said to her, I said, Lilia, there's something I want to share with you. Golf doesn't owe you anything. In fact, you owe golf. Look at your life. You get to pursue golf as your career. You have a 4-year college education from UCLA, thanks to your golf. I owe golf. Think about me, the caddy, who got a scholarship to college. And on it goes. Life doesn't owe you anything, right, Lori? What does life owe you? Nothing. We get out of life what we put into life. We're not owed anything. So using the right clubs on the golf course, it's kind of like We talk about the driver, okay? That's your tee off. You got to commit to that shot. It's a long shot. Well, in life, your driver might be committing to your goals. right? And then when you get off course, because your goals aren't coming the way you want them to, you have to take a step back and maybe, okay, use your wedge and recover and get back on track to achieve your goals in life. And so we kind of go down this comparison. It's a beautiful comparison for people to understand there are tools that they can use in life to help them achieve their dream. The reason I wrote this book was to inspire others to dream big, because you can reach it. You can get there.
Yes, and I absolutely agree. And as you get this book and read it, people, the clubs of success, he goes into more detail about that, which is actually this really great metaphor that breaks it down. I thought it broke it down in a way that was super easy to grasp, right? And I mean, it was a visual that just allowed you to see. You get a setback, you keep playing the game, you stay in there, you find your way around, you know, you get in a sand trap, you find your way, you keep working, you make the right choices.
Right, and, but life's going to throw stuff at you every day.
Yeah.
And if you give up, that's your choice.
Yeah.
That's your choice, right? But if you don't give up and you keep, there's a chapter called what? Find a way. I had to find a way many times in my life.
Yeah, you have the obstacles that pop up. In folklore, we call that the threshold guardian. You're trying for something and there will be something pop up to challenge you to see if you deserve what's on the other side of that. You know, I mean, maybe a crude way of putting it, but you work past those things to get the gold at the top of the mountain.
Absolutely. And I really believe tied very closely to that. And my father was the poster child of kindness to others. Mm. I do not believe you can achieve your dreams without the values that we talk about in this book. And that is being honest, not some of the time, all the time. Being kind, generous, grateful.
I love that, John. I love that, right? Because we don't talk about that enough anymore. It seems like those things kind of get pushed to the back.
You are not kidding. And that's why I think this, I'm really hoping that this book can change lives and get us going on the right track. When, you know, when we were little, we were taught these things. You know, my parents taught, you know, when someone throws, you know, a stone, throw bread back at them. You know what I mean? I mean, it's corny, but it's necessary today. There's so much, I hate to use the word even hatred. It's not the right word, but there's a lot of lack of kindness out there, and you can be kind in so many ways in your daily life.
Yeah.
And
how many problems does that solve? So many of them. John, as we end the program here, do you have any final thoughts that we haven't talked about that you want to leave with us?
I guess along these other lines, or these similar lines, I think of how we the last chapter of my book, I was struggling in my late 30s. I already had two reasonably successful companies, and I was struggling about something. And I couldn't figure out why was I struggling? Why wasn't I as happy as I should be? And I did a deep dive, and I went down a path called purpose of life on my own. Like, what am I doing here? Was I put on this earth to blend powders, right? And I realized when I was all done, I came up with what I think the purpose of life for all of us is, in three simple words: to do good.
Mm.
And that's the 10th chapter in my book, to do good, because it's the most important lesson of all. And you can take that in many ways. You should use your gifts that we've been given and do the best with them, do good with them.
I agree.
But do good for others. Giving back to others, doing good, I think is truly what life is about. And as we get, you know, as I've gone on and I've had time to reflect, and that's what my dad did his whole life. That's all he did, was do good. And he was right there in front of me. And yet I didn't figure it out till I was almost 40 years old.
That's how it works for most of us, right? John, where can people get your book?
You know, as usual, I think it's available almost anywhere these days. It's been out long enough. And you know, Amazon, of course. There's even a link at my website, youcanbethebest.com. You know,
and those links will be in the show notes. So you can go to loveyourstorypodcast.com. And in this episode and the show notes, you will have those links as well. John, thank you for being on the show today.
You're so welcome, Laurie.
In his book, John says, America has been called the land of opportunity. But the thing about opportunity is that it comes down to choices. My father ended up having an incredible life in America because he built that life. There are so many powerful concepts in this book. And I'll just end with this one. Ziggy came with nothing but a lot of trauma, a great work ethic, and a sense of morals and ethics. Despite having come from undoubtedly experiencing horrors in that war, in that POW camp, he made choice after choice to keep a good attitude, to work hard, to take care of others, to find a profession and do his best at it. He wasn't waiting to necessarily find his passion. You know, he just found a good profession that he could do. And while life is never simple, I think the old tried and true concepts of attitude, hard work, living with that moral and ethical compass can be the simple truths that create a beautiful and successful life. I hope that you will share this episode with one friend today because it's got some wonderful, great, uplifting ideas. I hope you got something from it. And we will see you in 2 weeks for the next episode of the Love Your Story podcast.